Parshas Emor, Tavshin Samaches. All right, our topics today are going to be the Omer, which we are in the middle of course. The part of the Omer prior to Lag BaOmer, as opposed to the part of the Omer after Lag BaOmer, because they're different in nature. Second of all, our objective today is to make sense of a Pasuk and a Rashi in this week's Parsha, particularly Pasuk, Sukkim really, Chaf Gimel, Perek Chaf Gimel, Pasuk Chaf Beis, and the Rashi on that Pasuk. And it gives us a great opportunity, analyzing this particular Pasuk and the Rashi and the Gemaras that the Rashi brings down and the associated comments of Chazal, gives us a great opportunity to really get a sense of the way the Mesorah, the oral transmission, has come down to us, and the style that Chazal used to write the Gemara, and how Torah Shebaal Peh still really remains very much Baal Peh. In other words, the words on the page don't give you a full picture of what's going on. You must have the background information, the explanation, which has been passed down through the Dore Doros, through the teachers, because the Gemara itself is impossible to understand at face value. So this particular Pasuk gives us a very good glimpse of that. So we're going to start out with a question, and these ideas that we're beginning with are found in my grandfather Sefer, Rav Schwab, on the Chumash, Mayan Beis HaShoeva. And the Pasuk we're looking at is Chaf Gimel, Chaf Beis. So if you scan the Pesukim prior to this and the Pesukim after this, you will find that we are in the section of the Moadim. Emor discusses the Moadim. So does Pinchas, but Emor and Pinchas differ in what aspects of the Moadim they speak about. In any case, we are right in the middle of the Moadim, and prior to this, we actually mention Sfiras HaOmer. If you look actually in Perek Chaf Gimel, Pasuk 15, 16, 17, all the way through Pasuk 21, it does tell you that you should count the Omer starting after Pesach, 50 days, and then you bring a Mincha Chadasha. You bring a Korban HaOmer, and then you bring a Mincha Chadasha, a new carbon, a new gift on Shavuos. The two bookends of Sfiras HaOmer, the beginning of Sfiras HaOmer and the end, which is Shavuos, the bookends are two carbonos. One is a barley offering at the beginning of the harvest, which ripens more earlier. And by Shavuos is the wheat harvest, and you bring two loaves of bread. By the way, the only time chametz was brought on the Mizbeach was on Shavuos with the two loaves of bread. And so the barley offering and the wheat offering were held together the days of Sfiras HaOmer. And following that, we speak about Shavuos. And there's one pasuk in between, which is Pasuk Chaf Beis. And it mentions a random halacha, which is the halacha of Leket Shikcha, as we know, Peya, leaving portions of your field, things you forgot to pick up, things that dropped out of your bundles, just leaving it there for the poor. And then the Chumash continues with, of course, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, etc. So this halacha, which at first glance is a random halacha relating to agriculture and the mitzvah of tzedakah, stuck right in between Shavuos and Rosh Hashanah, demands that we question why did the Torah just insert this halacha right here. So we look to Rashi for an answer. However, Rashi's answer is beautiful, but doesn't quite fit. It's not a tight fit. It doesn't answer the question at all. It just tells us another concept. And Rashi doesn't write in essay form explaining how his answer actually, you know, applies to the question. So Rashi says, here, if you look in the Rashi, he brings from the Torah's Kohanim, he says, Mara HaKasav Litneim Be'emtza HaRagolim. What did the Pasuk see? What did the Kasav, the Torah, see to stick in this halacha in the middle of the Regolim? Pesach Ve'atzeret Mikan, Pesach and Shavuos on one side, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur Mikan, and Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur on the other side. Lila Medcha, so it's to teach you. Shekol hanosin leket shichon peya la'ani karai, whoever gives leket shichon peya to the aniyim, karaoi, which in a manner that is ra'oi for them. In other words, everyone has a mitzvah to leave over the corner of the field and the forgotten, pieces of wheat that fall down or barley that fall down. But everybody, there's no particular rules regarding how big that corner has to be. You can leave a tiny corner or a large corner, etc. But whoever does it karaoi, worthy of who they are, of how much they have. In other words, there's room here for your own generosity, your own largeness of spirit. Malin alav ki'ilu bana beis hamikdash. The Torah considers it like this person built the beis hamikdash. The hikriv karbanos besocho and brought karbanos in it. That's why this mitzvah is between Shavuos and Rosh Hashanah. Now, obviously, that's not an answer at first glance. It's nice that leket shikcha and peya are so meritorious in the eyes of Hashem that He considers it like you built the beis hamikdash and brought karbanos. But what does it have to do with Shavuos and Rosh Hashanah? So, my grandfather suggests that really this pasuk is a hint to us. It's about a moed. This is the section of the moedim. Okay, this pasuk is a hint to us about one of the moedim, but it's not a moed that exists yet. It's hinting to us regarding a moed that will come to exist smack between Shavuos and Rosh Hashanah. And the moed that will come to exist is somehow embedded, the secret of that moed is embedded in this pasuk. So, if we think about it, we do have, the mitzvah of leket shikcha and peya played a very huge role in our history. Right? It led to a whole new path that the Jewish people were able to walk down. Leket shikcha and peya were the mitzvah that led to Boaz finding Rus. Rus became the grandmother of David. David is the great-grandfather of Mashiach, who is destined to build the third Beis HaMikdash. On which day? Tisha B'Av. Which will then in the future become a Yantiv. So right in between Shavuos and Rosh Hashanah, there is a secret, a hint here to the great holiday of the future, the greatest of the Moadim, the Moed of Tisha B'Av, which will take its place in the future, in the summer, on the day the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, will be the day of its rebuilding, that we will have come full circle, and this Moed will take its place right between Shavuos and Rosh Hashanah. And so the Torah can't mention the Moed directly because it doesn't yet exist. So the Torah hints to the Moed by using this mitzvah. Now, the question is, how was it that Rus came to be the the grandmother of David? So the answer is Boaz married her. Otherwise it wouldn't have happened. Boaz is from the line of Yehuda. How is it that it came to be that Boaz married her? Well, it started with Boaz recognizing her. How is it that Boaz came to recognize her? Well, that's because Naomi sent her to Boaz's field. So how did Rus get to Boaz's field? Well, if you look in the pasuk in Rus, the first time she went out to glean, she happened to find his field. She happened. The pasuk says it was a mikra. And she found there the most generous of hosts. She was treated so well, because he recognized in her this special quality that she had, that she was treated so well, she was sent home with so much that Naomi was astonished. And when she asked her where she'd been, and she explained to her that she had been with Boaz, in Boaz's field, Naomi, of course, concocted this idea and sent her back to the field once again in the hope that Boaz would notice her and perhaps even take upon himself the responsibility of Yibum, which really was not his direct responsibility. It was a great mitzvah, a great chesed. But in any case, she ends up there because she waited, the Chazal say, and asked people where they were going, and everybody was going to Boaz's field because he was the most generous. So it's his going with Nimishuras Adin and giving kavo to the Aniyim by leaving them as much as possible, making it easy for them, that led Rus to him. And this idea of kavod will factor greatly, as you will see later, later on. So the fact that Boaz was generous, which means that he did leket shikham pei, as the Rashi brings down, kira'oi, in a manner that was worthy of his wealth and his goodness of spirit. The fact that he was generous and he did it kara'oi, which means he didn't just do the minimum, he did it with largesse. That's what brought Rus to him, and the story unfolds from there. So it's really the fact that, and we have to keep this point in mind because we're going to come back to it, that a person acts kara'oi, according to their abilities, and not in a limited fashion. Now, this leads to, as we said, to Rus. Now, interestingly enough, when did Rus find herself going to the field of Boaz? What time of the year was it? So, Perek Aleph, the last pasuk in Rus, Pasuk Chaf Beis Perek Aleph, says that they came back from Sedei Moab, Vehem Ba'u Beis Lechem, and when did they come to Beis Lechem? Betchilas Ketzir Seorim, at the beginning of the barley harvest, the beginning of the Omer, which is our time period. So it's the beginning of the Omer, that's very significant, and the story unfolds, and it eventually ends with Shavuos, because Rus, we read on Shavuos, because she's a Gioris, we're all Gerim, and also the fact is that in a philosophical way, she went in her status, and Boaz too, from gathering barley to gathering wheat, which we will speak about later. So this whole story takes place in the beginning of the Omer. This is very important, and we will come back to it. But before we come back to it, let's focus on the concept of the building of the third Beis HaMikdash, the Yontiv that this Pasuk is making reference to. So in order to understand more about Binyan Bayis Shlishi, we find a pasuk in Shir HaShirim that, I'm sorry, we start with the Mishnah in Tanis. We start with the Mishnah in Tanis, which is very difficult to understand, and we're going to break it down piece by piece. So the Mishnah says like this, Amar of Shimon ben Gamliel. Is the last Mishnah in Tanis, Perek Dalet Mishnah Ches, the last Mishnah in the Perek, Amar of Shimon ben Gamliel. Lo hayu yamim tovim li Yisrael. There were no more joyous days for Klal Yisrael than Tu B'Av and Yom HaKippurim. Shebehen benos Yushalayim, those were the days that the Jewish girls would go out in white garments and they would dance in the vineyards. And what would they say? They would say, Bachor, young man, lift up your eyes and choose for yourself. And don't look at only beauty, okay, and charm. Look at our yichus, look at our family. Don't look at beauty. Look at our family. Look at our yichus, etc. Now, everybody who learns this is astonished, because Yom HaKippurim, which was such a holy day, is that the day that the girls go out and dance in the vineyards? And also, how does Tu B'Av come in here? What role does it play that allows it to be the day that everybody is dancing? What's the significance of Tu B'Av? So there, the Mishnah explains. Sena Ura'ena Benos Tzion, go out and see. He brings a medrash here from Shir HaShirim. Go out and see Benos Yerushalayim. Go see daughters of Yerushalayim. B'melech Shlomo. Go see Melech Shlomo. Go see Ba'atara She'itro Lo Imo. Go see the crown that his mother crowned him with. B'yom Chasnaso, on the day of his wedding. U'b'yom Simchas Libo, and on the day of the joy of his heart. This is explaining Yom Kippur and Tu B'Av as being the days that the girls would dance and there would be shidduchim made. So the significance of Yom Kippur and Tu B'Av is explained in a Medrash on Shir HaShirim, a Gemara on Shir HaShirim, which says, go out, daughters of Yerushalayim, and see Shlomo HaMelech, and see the crown his mother crowns him with on his wedding day and the day of the joy of his heart. Now, what does his wedding day mean? B'yom chasunaso, ze matan Torah. That's the day of matan Torah. B'yom simchas libo, and the day when his heart was joyous, ze binyan beis hamikdash, yibane bimhera b'yameinu. This is the binyan beis hamikdash that will be built. Adkan. Now, so wait a second. Here is Shir HaShirim, Pasuk Yud Aleph, is the source for this strange discussion, the strange explanation. Sena ura ena benos Yerushalayim, Perak Gimel, Pasuk Yud Aleph. Sena ura ena, I'm sorry, benos Tzion, b'melech Shlomo, b'atarash itcho lo imo, b'yom chasanaso, b'yom simchas libo. So, first of all, this is explaining the dancing on Tu B'Av and Yom Kippur. So, Shlomo HaMelech had two very joyous days, his wedding and the day of his joyous heart. The wedding day, Chazal tell us, is Matan Torah, which Shlomo didn't live at that time and didn't experience Matan Torah. The day of the joy of his heart is Binyan Vayishlishi, Bimhera B'Yameinu, which Shlomo is not alive, and maybe only through Tchias HaMeisim will be alive, but he certainly didn't experience it. So what does this Pasuk and Shir HaShirim mean, and what does Chazal mean? So they explain it. Well, we're not talking about Shlomo. Shlomo is just a code word. Shlomo is a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaMelech Shehashalom Shalo, the king that Shalom is his, peace is his. So now, hold on, now we go back. Go see the crown of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that Hashem's mother made for him on Matan Torah and when the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt. So, who's Hashem's mother and what is the crown? And furthermore, Chazal tell us, B'yom chasanoso, the day of his wedding, which is Matan Torah, is not speaking about Shavuos. It's speaking about Yom Kippur, the day of the second Luchos. Luchos Shniyos. So, go see HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's Melech Shlomo. Go see the crown, whatever that means, that his mother, whoever that is, crowned him with on Yom Kippur, when that is the day of the chasna, of the wedding, where he gave Klal Yisrael the second Luchos, and the Yom of, and the future day when the Beis HaMikdash will be built, Chazal tell us, that's not talking about Tisha B'Av, it's talking about Tu B'Av. Now, how is that the day of Binyan Beis HaMikdash? We thought it was the ninth of Av. So at least we know one connection, that the days the girls would go out on Yom Kippur and on Tu B'Av are very auspicious days, because those are the days that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shlomo, Melech Shalom Shalom, is crowned by his mother, because they are days that tell us that these are very auspicious days. One is the day called the wedding, and it's Yom Kippur. One is the day called the joyousness of his heart, and it's Tu B'Av. But we still need the key to all of these riddles. So what are Yom Kippur and Tu B'Av have in common? And let's think about them in history. Let's go back first in history. Yom Kippur is the day of the second Luchos. Why did we need second Luchos? Because the first Luchos were broken. What day were the first Luchos broken on? The 17th of Tammuz. That is the day of the saddest day, one of the saddest days in our early history, the day of the breaking of the Luchos, the 17th of Tammuz, commemorated till this day. And eventually, very much associated with the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. Obviously, it begins the 3 weeks. But it's the day of the breaking of the Luchos. Okay? And why did Moshe break the Luchos? Chet HaEgel. Chet HaEgel was a violation of Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Lo Yelocha Elohim Acherim. So the Tikkun is on Yom Kippur when we receive the second Luchos. Okay. Tisha B'Av is the day of the Chet HaMeraglim, the two great Chets, Chet HaEgel and Chet HaMeraglim, the loss of Torah in its perfect form and the loss of Eretz Yisrael in its perfect form. What is Tu B'Av? Why Tu B'Av and not Tisha B'Av? So my grandfather points out that Tu B'Av is how many days after Tisha B'Av? Well, the 9th, the 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, counting the 9th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th. Starting the day the Beis HaMikdash is built, Tu B'Av is 7 days later. That is the day of Chanukas HaMizbeach, which means that is the day the Karbanos start being brought finally in the Bayis Shlishi. Now, remember that Rashi, whoever keeps Leket Shekhanteh, is like he built the Beis HaMikdash and brought Karbanos? That won't be till Tu B'Av. Tu B'Av is when the Mizbeach is dedicated. Chanukah HaMizbeach, and we start using it. So it's actually, although Tisha B'Av is the day of the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, now we go back and adjust, it's actually Tu B'Av, which is the great Yontiv of the future. And Tu B'Av is a tikkun on Tisha B'Av, really, on the Meraglim. And Yom Kippur is a tikkun on Chet HaEgel, Shivasar B'Tamas. So both of these days have something in common. They both restore us to where we were before our two great failures, Chet HaEgel, Chet HaMeraglim, Shivasar B'Tamas and Tisha B'Av. They both represent a restoration, a reunion. Now, what type of reunion between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael? No wonder the day is celebrated by Shiduchim, by Zivugim, by people coming together. Yom Kippur and Tu B'Av. Now, my grandfather points out that only on these days, where the spiritual level of the Jews was so heightened, where on Yom Kippur, we are like Malachim. And Tu B'Av, which will be La'asid, which is a glimpse in La'asid Lavo, the Binyan Bayis Shlishi, at that point we'll have come full circle, we'll have made all our mistakes, we'll be existing with clarity, and on a Madrega, which is Kadosh. There is no fear that anything inappropriate will slip into this idea of marriage and finding each other, and it'll be done B'Kedusha, B'Tara, without anything to worry about. But until then, you know, it's not the recommended practice. But in any case, being that Yom Kippur and Tu B'Av share this distinction of the restoration, the reunion, the tikkun on Chet HaEgel, the tikkun on Chet HaMeraglim, the reunion with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the new luchos, the rebuilding and rededication of the Mikdash, we also realize that they share another similarity. And this has to do with the crown. The crown that his mother crowns him with. So first we'll work on the crown, and then we'll get to the mother. We know about crowns, and we've spoken about this before, so hopefully this jogs your memory. Twice Klal Yisrael lost their crowns. Which crowns? They were given crowns in the Midbar. If you look quickly back to Kisisa in Shemos, where the Chet HaEgel is, Perek Lamed Gimel, Pasuk Dalet, and then Pasuk Vav. Anyone have the page? What page is it?
502.
So you'll see in Pasuk Dalet that in the aftermath of the Chet HaEgel here. V'yishma ha'amis ha'davar hara hazeh, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe that he should get them out of the Midbar and take him to Israel, which was very bad news for them. We've spoken about this in the past, not for now, but they understood this was a terrible abandonment. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was actually abandoning them. Lo shasu ish edyo alav. That's Pasuk Dalet. No one donned his jewelry, but if you look in the Rashi on Pasuk Dalet, he says, "Ktarim shenitnu lahem b'choriv." These are crowns that were given to them at Choriv, which is another word for Sinai. Kisha amru nasa v'nishma. When they said nasa v'nishma, they got some kind of a crown. If you look, HaKadosh Baruch Hu crowned them. If you look at Pasuk Vav, it says, "V'yitznatzlu b'nei Yisrael s'edja mehar Choriv." The children stripped themselves of their crowns from Har Choriv. Now, after Chet HaEgel, after the breaking of the first Luchos, after the loss of the Madrega of what they had experienced on Shavuos, the way it was demonstrated was they took their crowns off. They were no more worthy of wearing the crowns they got for saying Nasa V'Nishma, for being Klal Yisrael. When they received the second Luchos, when Moshe achieved the Kapara for them, when Hashem said Solachti, we don't hear about them putting their crowns back on. There's another time they lost their crown. Chet HaMeraglim, which led to Tisha B'Av. Remember, they cried that night. They were going to cry Tisha B'Av every night. Well, if you look in Eicha, the way the Chorban is described is in the words and description and the imagery of a crown and of ornaments. Nafla Ateret Roshenu. The crown of our head has fallen off. So both of these times, both of the times Klal Yisrael, so to speak, wore a crown, one's for Kabbalah Satorah, one's for the Beis HaMikdash, these crowns were removed from Klal Yisrael. The question is, where are the crowns? And what has happened with them? And do we put them back on? What do we do with the crowns? What is the rest of the story? Well, these crowns do reappear. But it's very interesting. Our objective is not to re-crown ourselves. Our objective now becomes to take these crowns and crown God with them, to give them back. That's really the highest tikkun. Now, what do we mean by that? The crown that his mother crowned him with. So in order to understand how we take the crowns and place them, so to speak, on the head of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we have to know what the mother is. Who is the mother? Well, who is Klal Yisrael? Who is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mother? You know, it's kind of, you know, way too close to other theologies to talk about the mother. However, here is what Chazal tell us. This is again on this pasuk on Shir Hashirim, Perek Gimel Pasuk Aleph, Tzenu Re'ena Benos Tzion, go and see daughters of Zion, which means Klal Yisrael, not just daughters. Go see Melech Shlomo Hashem. Go see the crown that his mother crowned him with. Now we're getting a glimpse of what that crown might be, because we're talking about Yom Kippur and Tu B'Av and the crowns we lost, and these are the days we dance, and somehow on these days we crown Hashem, and we're dealing with the same crowns. But who's the mother? And so here's what Chazal tell us. This is what Rav Nechunya said. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai asked Rav Elazar ben Rav Yossi, the son of Rav Yossi, perhaps you heard from your father what the meaning to these words are, ba'atara she'itro lo imo, the crown that his mother crowned him with. Maybe you have some mesorah that you heard from your father. So he replied, yes, there's a mashal of a king. And he only had one daughter. And he was very fond of her. And he loved her so much, he couldn't stop loving her until he called her Biti, my daughter. And he brings Tehillim, chapter 45, 11. And there is a reference where he calls her Biti. So Rav Nechunya says, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai asked Rav Elazar ben Rabbi Yossi, perhaps you've heard from your father something to explain this strange pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Ba'atara She'itra Lo Imo, the crown his mother crowned him with. So he said, yes, there's a mashal of a king who had a daughter that he loved so much, and he couldn't express his love for her, he couldn't stop loving her, until he was able to call her Biti, my daughter. And he brings from Tehillim Mem Hei, which is 45, Pasuk Yud Aleph, a quote, listen, daughter, and see. Shimi Bas Uri, listen, daughter, and see. But then he loved her so much, he couldn't express it, or he couldn't stop loving her, until he was able to call her Achosi, my sister, as it says here further on in Shir HaShirim, in Perek 5, Pasuk 2, Hey Beis, Pischili Achosi Rayasi, please open up for me, my daughter, my sister, my beloved. And then he didn't stop loving her, or he couldn't express, you might say, his love for her, until he was able to call her my mother, which comes from Yeshayahu, Perek Nun Aleph, which is 51. And it says here, Hakshivu Eli Ami, listen to me, my people, Ula Umi, and my nation, Eli Hazinu, to me, bend your ear, but we learn here, don't say Luumi, my nation, but rather Leimi, my mother. Please listen to me, my mother. And the Kodesh Baruch Hu calls this daughter eventually his mother. So Rav Shimon Bar Yochai stood up and kissed him on the head and said, if I'd only been created just to hear this idea, it would have been sufficient. So he loved his daughter so much. First he called her Biti. Then he loved her so much he had to call her Achosi. Then he loved her so much he had to call her my mother, Imi. And when Rav Shimon Bar Yochai heard this, Amad, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Nashku al Rosho, and he kissed him on his head, and he said to him, if I had only come into this world to hear this one thing, it would have been worth it. So Rav Shimon Bar Yochai asked Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yossi says, I'll tell you what my father said. My father said about the king had a daughter, and he called her Biti, and then he called her Achosi, and then he called her Imi, and this was so astonishing. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai said, I would have lived, it's worth it that I lived just for this. Now, first of all, these are all females. Balasha Nekeva. And what does this mean? What's the secret to this? So, the king had a daughter. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the king. Who's the daughter? Klal Yisrael, for sure. So first the Kadosh Baruch Hu calls Klal Yisrael my daughter, then he calls her my sister, and then he calls her my mother. So what's the difference in relationship between the king and his daughter, his sister, and his mother? There's a difference. Obviously, the daughter is the one that he protects and takes care of and is vulnerable and is weak and is young and unprepared to defend herself entirely, and therefore she needs her father to protect her. He has a relationship with the daughter that is one of the mentor, the giver, the protector, it's the one who ensures her safety. And this is how he calls her Biti. And that is one aspect of our relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. However, it progressed from there, and it got to the point where he stopped calling her Biti, my daughter, and he began to call her my sister. Now, the relationship of somebody with their sister is not necessarily one of protection and teaching and all of that, but one of equivalence, right? Equals. You're mom, the brother, and you're my sister, and we both work together, and we both have responsibility. There's much more of a balance in the relationship. And he did call Klal Yisrael my sister. Achosi. Pischi li achosi. Open for me, my sister. However, it didn't stop there. He continued to develop a relationship with her until eventually he called her my mother. Listen to me, and it's clearly talking about Klal Yisrael because the quote comes from for Yeshayahu. Hakshivu Eli Ami, my nation, Ula'umi, and also my people. Alai Ha'azinu, to me you should listen, and don't call it my people, call it my mother. Not La'umi, Imi. So he's clearly talking about Klal Yisrael. So what is the relationship that a person has with their mother? Well, the mother is then usually the one who watches and protects and guides and teaches. So eventually, Klal Yisrael will become the mother, which is almost like a dominant position to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Well, if you look through Jewish history, this is certainly the case of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the early days. The days that we were the daughter of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we were dependent on HaKadosh Baruch Hu for not just food and life and all of that, as we still are now, but we were a young nation, Yetzias Mitzrayim, Pesach, right, the beginning of our nationhood, and we didn't know what Hashem wanted from us. We didn't even know who we were, what we would become. The people of the world didn't recognize us, didn't know what our position was supposed to be, what we were supposed to accomplish, how they were supposed to relate to us. Nobody knew who Hashem was in a real sense, his power and his control. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to teach all of these things to everybody, and he did so with great wonders, miracles, teaching, instruction, Torah. It was like a child to a parent, and the child was protected and guided. And this period of Biti, my daughter, lasted 1,000 years, which is called the era of prophecy, which goes from Moshe to the Anshei Knesset Gedolah, the beginning of the Second Temple, at which point Nevuah was unfortunately lost, and we no longer have it. But in that 1,000 years of Nevuah, Klal Yisrael were not just the lucky beneficiaries of prophecy, but they were also the beneficiaries of miracles, open miracles in the Beis HaMikdash, and direct communication with the Kadosh Baruch Hu and the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash, and all of the supernatural aspects of their life. That was all part of the era of my daughter. But the daughter grows up. And what's supposed to happen is the daughter becomes mature. And she doesn't need the parent anymore to teach her every little thing and tell her every little thing and guide her and show her and do things for her. But eventually she becomes my sister, which means we both do the same things together. I bring Hakaras Hashem into the world, recognition of Hashem into the world, and you also are responsible for bringing the recognition of Hashem into the world in your way. You're like my sister. We both have the same mission. And when we talk about bringing the recognition of Hashem into the world, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu put 1,000 years of supernatural lifestyle, more in the beginning and less and less and less, but it was always an element of the supernatural, the heavens coming in and imposing itself on the earth, so to speak. all of that becomes integrated, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name becomes known, and there's a recognition, and then it becomes our job. And when we talk about creating the recognition of Hashem in this world, the way we speak about it mystically is the way the words we use are enthroning HaKadosh Baruch Hu on the Kisei HaKavod. When we talk about a Kisei HaKavod, the throne of glory, that we enthrone Hashem, we so to speak, coronate HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We enthrone Him. We call Him King. Or we crown Hashem. It's all in the same idea. What we mean is bringing a recognition of God to this world. That's called enthroning Hashem on the Kisei HaKavod. That Hashem should be looked at with kavod. Hashem's kavod, His honor, should be visible in this world. That's called enthroning Hashem, making Hashem known in this world, making it clear that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the source and the beginning and the end of all kavod, and everything is directed towards bringing the presence of Hashem, the awareness of Hashem, closer and closer into the lives of every person. That's called enthroning Hashem. So here we as sisters have the same job. So Hashem does it to some degree, and we do it to some degree. Now, when was the era of my sister? It wasn't as long as the era of my prophecy, of my daughter, rather, of the prophetic era. It really can be said to be between the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, when Nevuah was lost, until Hanukkah. Hanukkah being the gateway to the Golus. Hanukkah being basically the era of the second temple. We did have a Beis HaMikdash, but we didn't have an Aron. We had no Nevuah. We had no kings from Beis David. We didn't have open miracles, but we were in Eretz Yisrael, and we did have a Beis HaMikdash. Okay, so it was in between. And the Nes of Hanukkah tells us that it was, although it was a time heading to Hester Panim, the hiddenness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, make no mistake about it, the Nes of Hanukkah, the burning of the fire for 8 days, the burning of the oil, was a Nes Galoy. It was an open miracle. It was just Benistar in a hidden place. Okay? So that Klal Yisrael would know as they went into the next phase, which is the destruction of the Second Temple, our phase, the last 2,000 years, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was with them. They would know that through the Nes Galoy of the menorah, but only they would know that. It would be something we stay with and we keep in our consciousness, and it strengthens us that Hashem is with us and we haven't been rejected, but no one else really sees it. And that ends really the era of my sister. The last 2,000 years, which are called Yemos HaMashiach, and hopefully what that means is all of the different midrashim that apply to Mashiach don't all have to happen in the last 3 seconds of the 2,000 years. They hopefully, have many of them have happened already. But the last period is my mother, where Klal Yisrael actually play the role, in a sense, of the mother of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which means to say, we don't have any of the things we had, not even the little that we had in the time of the Second Temple, not even the Beis HaMikdash, not even Eretz Yisrael really truthfully in our hands. Every time we look up at the Har HaBayis, it's a pain in our heart, especially today where we think about our return to Eretz Yisrael. But when you look at the Har HaBayis and there's a mosque up there, it's not ours. We don't have real control. This isn't the Eretz Yisrael that we've dreamed for and hoped for. It's getting there, hopefully. It's hopefully part of the process. We can't imagine it, Chas V'Shalom, any other way. But God forbid that it. But it's still lacking. The main thing is lacking, obviously. But this era is the era of we becoming the mother. Now, what's our job as the mother, way beyond the sister? We don't have any of the things we had, not even this in the Second Temple. So what do we have left? We have our knowledge. We have the fact that we received the Luchos, and although we fell, we received the second Luchos, and they're still ours, and we're still in a bris with Hashem. And we know that though the Beis HaMikdash doesn't stand, we can rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. It will come back to us. We know that it's in our hands to bring back the things we lost. We lost Eretz Yisrael, and when we lose Eretz Yisrael, make no mistake about it, we lose a huge element of Torah. And even today, that we don't have the perfect scenario in Eretz Yisrael, everybody knows that Torah learned and understood in Eretz Yisrael is of a different quality than anything we can do here. Everybody knows that when they go to Eretz Yisrael and they start to learn in yeshiva, it's a whole different ballgame. So when we lose Eretz Yisrael, no question about it, we lose an element of Torah and our ability to integrate Torah. So, but these are the years that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has really given the ball into our hands and said, now you, my nation, listen to me, but you're like my mother. Your listening to me really expresses itself in your standing firm and establishing and through lifestyle, through mitzvahs, through the way we learn, the societies we set up, what we devote ourselves to. We are bringing to the world all of the truths, all of the mitzvahs, all of the everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught us in the era of prophecy and in the era of my sister. Okay, all of those things Hashem worked so hard to get into our souls and our hearts now are firmly embedded within us, and we, in a grassroots kind of way, have to bring them to the fore, and we have to establish who is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what is the power of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what He expects from us, how we will live. We, it's all in our hands to bring those truths out once more. If we can succeed in standing up for, in living, and establishing and making all those things that Hashem taught us for so many years, bringing them out and making them obvious in the world, that's called crowning HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Putting the crown on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's head. We do it. In other words, making the Hakaras Hashem clear in this world, making it obvious that there's a God, and this is what He wants, and we'll never be, and no one can ever tell us that He's abandoned us, and we don't have a role to play. That's called crowning HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So now we go back and we say, daughters of Zion, go and see the crown that Melech Shlomo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, was crowned by his mother, Klal Yisrael, in the end. On the two happiest days, we crown HaKadosh Baruch Hu on Yom Kippur, and we crown HaKadosh Baruch Hu on Tu B'Av. Why these 2 days? Because these were the days where the crowns we received were removed from us. But our objective is not really to place the crown back on our head. Our objective is first to take those crowns of Torah and Eretz Yisrael and through our own hard work, place them on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's head. But what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do with those crowns? It's very interesting. When we give HaKadosh Baruch Hu kavod, that kavod comes right back to us. That's where we get kavod from. The strange paradox is, the more we honor HaKadosh Baruch Hu and bring kavod to Hashem in this world, the more we as a people achieve kavod. Now there are two quotes regarding kavod. Both teach us that a person who chases after kavod, first of all, will not see themselves being granted kavod. Kol harodef achar hakavod, hakavod boreach mimeno, whoever runs after kavod, the kavod just eludes him or her. This is from the Yerushalmi. But furthermore, and tying into what we're saying today, kol harodef achar hakavod, and this is from a Bryce and Yoshua, the kol harodef achar hakavod, whoever chases kavod, in other words, whoever puts their kavod first and foremost, marchik es Yeshua, really is doing a great disservice to the Yeshua, because the Yeshua, as we are learning, and we will learn more further, is very much about limiting our desire to feed ourselves with the kavod we would like to have, and extending the kavod and granting it not to ourselves, but ultimately to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is the key to bringing the geula, and in a sense enthroning HaKadosh Baruch Hu finally for all time. The truth is, if you think about it, the more a person does not pursue their own status and their own honor, and what's paramount in their minds is humbling themselves to give someone else kavod, that aspect of a person's nature is what really is their most dignified and respect-worthy aspect. For example, sometimes it becomes very difficult for a person to restrain or put aside their kavod, or it's very important to them to preserve their own kavod. Whenever we preserve our own kavod, it's at the expense of giving kavod to others. Here's an application of this where this becomes hopefully obvious. Many people have a very hard time apologizing when they know they're wrong. It's harder to apologize to a sibling, a parent, than it is sometimes to apologize to a friend or someone who's not as close to us. When a person needs to apologize to somebody close to them who really knows them, there becomes a conflict between preserving one's kavod, because it's a little humiliating to apologize and it's a little humbling, preserving one's kavod, or not preserving our kavod, humbling ourselves and giving kavod to the person who really deserves the apology, recognizing that they were right. They had a real complaint. They had a real grudge, and they were right, and we did something wrong. And they were right to feel hurt. So, in a sense, validating them is giving them kavod. But it comes at the expense of not preserving our own kavod. So when we give kavod, though, to another person, in the end, what that does is it brings kavod to us, because the most respect-worthy person is a person who can do that. It's not a person who's so beclouded by their own personal, problems that they can't extend themselves and do what's right. Their own issues or their own personality flaws. So that really does bring kavod. A humble person is really the person that gets the most kavod. A truly humble person is the person in the end that earns the most kavod in someone else's eyes. Same thing with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When we realize that it's our job as Klal Yisrael to restore the kavod to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it does come at the cost of preserving our own kavod. It comes at the cost of doing the mitzvahs that we don't necessarily want to do, and living up to standards that we might not want to live up to because they're difficult for us. So, for example, one of the Aseres HaDibros is Kabed Es Avicha Ve'Es Imecha, giving kavod to your parents. It's not a Midah Tova, like apologizing. It's a mitzvah d'oraisa in the Aseres HaDibros, Kabed Es Avicha. Now, we know that for many people, where many of us are in the sandwich generation, giving kavod to one's parents does often demand a choice not to preserve our own kavod, to deal with a lot of difficulty, a lot of humbling oneself, being sometimes even being unappreciated, belittled, ran around, demanded from without any gratitude. There's a lot of that. It comes with a reduction of one's own desire to preserve one's kavod and granting kavod to the parent. But why do we do this? Because the parent is not the parent per se. The parent is the vehicle HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to bring us into this world. So it's giving kavod to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's really what it is. Despite how good or bad the parent was, how difficult they or the person they've become, it's about giving kavod to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So whenever a person brings kavod, either to another person, or in the end, even through this mitzvah, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it does demand certain limitations on one's own desire to preserve their status and their kavod and their sense of self. And a person needs kavod to exist. Our nefesh is called kavod. Ura kavodi, awake. My kavod. A person needs kavod to survive, but sometimes a person needs to limit the desire for their own kavod and thereby give kavod to others, which thereby, in the end, actually bestows kavod upon them. So what happens here is the following, and now we get to Rus. The big picture. We, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, gave us the luchos and granted us crowns. He gave us Eretz Yisrael, and it was a crown on our national head. An ornament, a status symbol, showed our kavod. But we, back then, lost both of these crowns. But over the course of 2,000 years of history, as we progress from my daughter to my sister to my mother, and sometimes children don't appreciate what their parents give them and what their parents teach them, and then when they get older, they go back and recapture all those things. That happens to many people, most people. So over the years, we've learned what this has done to us, the loss of Torah, the loss of Eretz Yisrael. We've suffered the consequences. Our nation is basically decimated, 80% assimilation rate. We know what it's like not to have Eretz Yisrael. We've lived through it. Okay, and so we've learned. And now we've come to a point where we want to recapture those crowns that we lost. We want our Torah back, and a full involvement in it, and we want Eretz Yisrael back fully, and we choose on our own to make that happen, to do tshuva, to learn Torah, build endless yeshivas and support them. fight as hard as we can to get back Eretz Yisrael, move to Eretz Yisrael, dedicate our efforts towards at least supporting Eretz Yisrael. We've chosen to recapture those crowns. And we know that Torah and Eretz Yisrael, those two crowns Hashem has given us that we lost, we will give those crowns, so to speak. We will crown Hashem with our desire, our show Hashem sincerely that we want them back, that we value them. And by that, we bring honor to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who has preserved us all through history, just till this point. And when Hashem is enthroned and crowned, so to speak, which is our, and the throne Hashem is sitting in is our love for Eretz Yisrael and our love for the Torah and our dedication to both of these goals, despite all of the people everywhere that try to knock us off course, mock us, distract us, that brings kavod to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And of course, when Hashem is crowned and sitting on His throne, we are the people, we are His closest, we are in the palace, so to speak. We bask in that glory. It brings kavod to us. Now Rus, who went and found herself in the beginning of the Omer, this time period, in Boaz's field, is the paradigm of the person who lived in a status, had the status of kavod. She was a princess. And she willingly was able to forego her own kavod and give kavod to Rus, not because Rus might be had the most charismatic personality, because Rus was her link to Torah, Naomi was her link to Torah. Naomi wanted desperately offspring. She gave kavod to that through her own self-sacrifice. She gave kavod to Torah. She is the paradigm of a person who puts kavod, her kavod, second to bring kavod to others. This is clearly what Boaz saw, the essence of chesed. And because of that, she was the one who was granted kavod, malchus beis David, and binyan beis hamikdash. Interestingly enough, the first part of Sfiras HaOmer, up until Lag BaOmer, is 32 days. The second part, Lag BaOmer to Shavuos, is 17 days. Kavod is bigamatria 32. What kind of kavod? It was the barley harvest. But by the time you get to Shavuos, it's the wheat harvest. What's the difference between barley and wheat? Everybody speaks about this, I'm sure you heard it. Barley is animal food. It's the lower level. It was given to the animals. Now we eat it. We put it in the cholent. I don't know. But then it was animal food. Okay? But wheat is human food. It's a progression. It's a development of the human personality from base to elevated. That's really the concept of the Omer. It's an elevation. It's progressing spiritually. Ruth starts out in the barley episode, in the barley time period. She represents, though, and this is what leads her straight to Shavuos, the Kabbalah Sator to Mashiach ben David, who was born on Shavuos. David HaMelech born on Shavuos. So she, her whole path goes through chesed. But what type of chesed? If you had to describe the chesed, transferring, really, the kavod that she was used to onto somebody else. Okay, forgoing her kavod and giving kavod, that type of chesed. By the way, that's the greatest chesed, so to speak, that we could do to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Give kavod back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the first part of the Omer is all about awareness of kavod, the place of kavod. Who is gaining kavod now? Us or HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Why did the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva die? Lo nahagu kavod. They didn't give kavod to each other. Talmid Chachamim. People learning Torah. They didn't give kavod to people learning Torah. Each other. It's all about where the kavod goes. Rus got it right. Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim didn't get it right. Hopefully, we get it right. And when we're able to give kavod back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through thinking, like as the examples we gave, just simple examples, apologizing, keep it of the aim, and there's a zillion other examples, where a person puts their status aside for something that is kavodik in the eyes of Hashem, then that person is very much participating in the ultimate task of bringing the crown back to Hashem, crowning Melech Shlomo, and that crowning of Melech Shlomo, of Hashem, will be evident by the Binyan Bayis Shlishi, by the holiday of Tu B'Av, which is, of course, hinted to in our parsha, through the mitzvah of Leket Shechem Peah, the total reunion of HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Klal Yisrael, the total cleansing, Yom Kippur, the chuppah, the remarriage, the oneness that we will reestablish with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we play a part in that task. It's every Jewish person's job to give the, somehow, some way, give the crown back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and in that way, we are assured that that is the way we reestablish our position and get back our kavod as the as my daughter, my sister, my mother. Let me mention one more thing. It's all in the feminine. Nekeva, nekeva, nekeva. Something very particular about a nekeva. And by the way, whenever HaKadosh Baruch Hu is close to us, it's always belasha nekeva, such as shechina. Okay? It's nekeva. Something about nekeva. That what differentiates a nekeva from a zohar is one major thing. Okay, you can argue if it's psychological and intellectual, if that's very, that's, you know, nurture or nature or the what's going on in you know, sociologically. But one thing clearly differentiates Nekeva from Zohar, and that is Nekeva is a makabel, she receives. Okay, interestingly enough, we received as my daughter. Okay, we received partially as my sister. But as a mother, we're giving. It's true, the makabel, we are makabel all only so that we should become mashpia, so we should give. And we are makabel as a nation so much HaKadosh Baruch Hu poured into us, so that now at their last stage of history, we actually return that by becoming the one who is the source of the influence. Even a woman who conceives, she's makabel, but then she becomes the mashpia, the one that is the giver, the influencer. And that is what we mean when we say things like Tinu Oz LeElokim, empower God to give us what he wants to give us, the covet he wants to give us. And just to end, the way we can concretize this in day-to-day, moment-by-moment action is every time we make a bracha, we are actually basing, the bracha is based on this concept. The words are Baruch Atah Hashem. You are blessed. Well, that's, you know, that's not what we're saying. You should be blessed. We're not hoping that Hashem should be blessed. Hashem is the source of bracha. He doesn't need bracha. The way my grandfather explains, really, that you understand Baruch Atah Hashem, we are saying, because of our mitzvah that we are now doing, Asher Kedushanu, because of the Kedusha we're bringing into the world through this action, what should happen? You, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, should be more known in the world. You should be mivorach. Now, mivorach always means it should be increased. Baruch, as you well know, I'm sure you know this, Beis is two. That's the second set, you know, of the single digits. Right? There's one is individual, then there's two. There's already multiple. Reish is 200, and Chaf is 20. It's not a gematria. It's just saying it's the multiple. It's the increasing. Okay? So we're saying, Baruch at Hashem, your awareness in this world should be increased through the mitzvah I'm doing. That's what we're really hoping. We're not saying that Hashem should be blessed. He doesn't need our blessings. We're hoping that the kavod of Hashem should be increased in this world. The awareness of Hashem should be increased in this world. That's how we take the matter into our own hands and put thought into every action that we do, even in the things we just benefit from, like eating or smelling something beautiful. We thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu and hope that the beauty in the world, Hashem's presence, should always be known more and more, to our awareness of it and bringing it to the forefront, making it obvious to others. So then we hope with all of our efforts, we will actually play, be worthy of the restoration, all the things that we truly need and daven for. Okay. Have a wonderful day.